The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but
we
because they are hard.
Start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, everyone, and hello from the Space Show. I am your host, David Livingston. Welcome to a very special Thursday evening Space Show program. Great to be here. Thank you all for tuning in. And it's always special when Tom Olson is our guest, but even more special because it's a special day that we're doing it. And more about that in just a few minutes. A couple of quick announcements. Those of you who would like to call and talk with Tom Olson, the phone number to use is 1-866-687-7223. Remember, there are no call screeners. Let the phone ring. Be patient, and I'll bring you up on air as quickly as possible. And you can also use email, drspace@thespaceshow.com. You can also use our blog, which is on our website. Go all the way over to the far right to upcoming shows. This is the first show listed. Open that page because that is the archive page for this program. And then scroll down where the comments are and comment away or post your question. You do not need to log into any program to do that. You can do so as a guest. And as soon as you post it, I will get a copy of it and can bring it up on the discussion. So those are the three ways that you can reach us. The telephone is the best way and the preferred way. Again, 1-866-687-7223. Email drspace@thespaceshow.com and then our blog at thespaceshow.com. While we're talking about the website, which again is thespaceshow.com, don't forget we have a very detailed website newsletter, center right, and it is uploaded fresh on Sunday after we complete the Sunday program. Not only does it give all of the week's programming in detail, if we have to make modifications during the week, we do it on the website newsletter, not the email newsletter. And if you scroll down, you'll see all of the programs we have planned and scheduled, and we're booking into the early part of October of this year right now. So check it out. Everything we do is archived, so you can very quickly download our programs or easily listen to them off of our website. There's an upper left menu, and if you go to the support menu, that is where you will find our store. If you want to buy T-shirts or hats or coffee mugs or license plate frames that weren't made in your state prison, there's a lot of things you can get there. So check it out, and hopefully you'll find some items that are there. I send a lot of people baby gifts when they have babies that say the Space Show on it. That seems to be a pretty good and well-received gift. They're all space cadets, of course, so they are happy to get it. So that might be a suggestion for some of you if you have friends that have recently had a newborn or a young child that you want to give a gift to. The most important buttons are over on the right, and it's Support the Space Show. So remember, we are a 501c3 nonprofit with OneGiantLeapFoundation.org, and we are able to bring you these programs and distribute our content for free. Only because many of you do financially support us with your contributions, and we're deeply appreciative of that. Remember, if you're a U.S. federal taxpayer, you do get a deduction on your taxes for your gift on the federal side, and the same for California, as we're a public benefit corporation in the Golden State. If you have any questions, do check us out at OneGiantLeapFoundation.org or simply email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. excuse me. We are copyrighted and trademarked, but all of you do have permission to download our programs and to share them. There's a couple of rules about that, and one of them is not to do anything commercial with the programs. Number two, no edits, cuts, clips, no putting anything up on YouTube or any other website, including your own. And then, again, no written transcripts, not even for your own use. Do read our full copyright protection statement at the bottom of every spaceshow.com website page, as well as OneGiantLeapFoundation.org page. And if you have any questions, if you want an exception, please email me, drspace@thespaceshow.com. Podcasting is through gigadial.net, and check it out. We're on iTunes and other locations as well. If you have any podcasting questions, don't hesitate to ask me, including if they apply to your smartphone. And the podcasts are probably the biggest growing section of our listening audience. So if you are having some kind of a problem or issue, we really do want to hear from you, and we really do want to get that problem resolved, and we appreciate that. We do have sponsors for the website and for the space show, and they're corporate. And we deeply appreciate them being with us, and we would not be doing the space show without our special corporate sponsor. So their banner ads go across the homepage. Check them out from time to time. They do change the content and the messaging behind the banners every once in a while. And we read their messages at the first and second half of the space show program. So up front, the first segment, the Integrated Space Plan is a sponsor. This is the detailed 100-year forecast of our future in space. Their plan includes Earth to orbit and reusable in-space transportation. It also depicts development of the Moon and Mars, followed by a base in the asteroid belt and space settlements. And their website, where you can check it all out, is thespaceplan.com. If you view it online, it's got over 500 elements or cells. They're all interactive. They open up into a lot more information. They're also presenting a new revised integrated space plan at ISDC. Those of you that are going to be there next week, make sure you stop by their program. I believe it is on Saturday, but do check your agenda for that. If you do go, I'd love to hear from you on an open line show so you can give me an update on what you thought about it, because unfortunately, I won't be at ISDC. You can buy the integrated space plan poster. You can order it off of their website. It's full size and full color, but of course it is not interactive. Again, their website is thespaceplan.com. The Space Foundation is another of our sponsors, and they are now talking about their 34th symposium now that the 33rd has successfully come to a close. The 34th is also in Colorado Springs at the Broadmoor Hotel, April 16th to 19th. Check it out at spacesymposium.org or spacefoundation.org at their website. Great for networking and meeting and learning a lot of new things. Completely different kinds of people and industry representation that you will find from an advocate conference. It will certainly expand your network and your base. So hopefully you can attend and check it out. And if you have any questions, fire them off to me, and I'll help you get them answered. And that brings me to tonight's special show, which it does feature Tom Olson, who is back with us. And Tom has been a business systems engineer and analyst in the communications, aerospace, and publishing sectors. In addition, he has worked in analysis and operational roles in the financial services sector, which is cash and fund management. He's a serial entrepreneur. He co-founded Exodus Consulting Group as a catalyst to help tech startups and investors find one another. He served on the original organizing subcommittee for the Space Investment Summit, and that brought together interested investors and space entrepreneurs, and then eventually went into the business plan program, and that's one of the topics, business plan competition that we're going to be talking about. He is one of the original four contributors to the Space Cynics blog, which was dedicated to fighting against ignorance, obfuscation, boosterism, and some parts of the new space sector. We didn't use the word false news back then, but we could certainly have used it if we had thought about it, or false Kool-Aid, or false fantasy, or however you want to describe it. Unfortunately, Space Cynics has kind of gone by the wayside. It was a lot of fun doing it, and we've tried to revise it a couple of times, but it just doesn't get revised. I guess the time have passed it by, but I'm sure Tom will tell you, it was an awful lot of fun when we were doing it. Today he is Director of Business Development at Aviato Limited. This is in the UK. It's an early stage firm that will soon provide high altitude platforms for the internet and mobile services. And he is also chair and founder for the not-for-profit Center for Space Commerce and Finance. This is in Texas. And he is the new owner of the New Space Business Plan competition because it went through a lot of changes toward the end of its life when it was being done as part of the New Space Conference in Silicon Valley. And Tom is going to tell us about the new Space Business Plan competition. Tom, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great, David. Kind of a interesting. Yeah, I missed the Cynics blog, too. I guess we're just too busy trying to be, like, entrepreneurial and doing those kinds of things. But we've got some big gigs going on right now, so it's, I don't find a lot of time to write, and I should, because I came up with something a couple weeks ago that I think will, like, change the world, but I can't talk about it until I write it, so...
Well, the site is still active. It is still up. It's never been taken down. So all it would take would be for one of us to post an article and then promote it and hopefully get some traction back. But
well, there is always going to be smoke and mirrors and Kool-Aid in this industry. It still has the highest signal-to-noise ratio for business planning and development of any other industry on Earth or off it. There's always room for great humor if you're willing to get out there and look for it.
Oh, absolutely, and a sharp tongue to put it forth.
Yeah,
because Space
City. The other irony I wanted to, well, it's not an irony really, just an amusing kind of thing. One of your sponsors is the Integrated Space Plan.
Right.
Well, Jay Whitner, about a year ago, invited me to be on the advisory committee for the Integrated Space Plan.
Uh-huh.
He has yet to ask me for any advice.
Well, maybe you're just being there it comes through osmosis, like buying a book.
I don't know if I have that kind of gravitas.
You know, like you buy a book and you just put it on your shelf and never read it, but somehow you get all the information into your brain.
Yeah, like this book on securities analysis that I have on my shelf. It's a classic. It's like an 80-year-old classic, and I have yet to, like, crack a page of it. But it looks really cool, and people
put it under your pillow.
Hey, you've got that thing, yeah. You must.
You need just put it under your pillow. I'm telling you, it'll
like Edgar Cayce. Yeah,
that's right. It'll transfer into into your brain.
Yeah. Well, of course, knowing you, David, you'd have completely different books under your pillow at night, I'm sure.
I do. How to Train My Siberian Husky. You know. You know. We won't go down that road.
No, but we've been known to. So
but I do have to tell you that in the 16 years I've been doing the space show, which predominantly really is an educational show, and I really did honestly and legitimately set out to provide an educational format, it is kind of frustrating to realize that the fantasy part of space grows far faster than the grounded reality part of space.
And that's always been kind of the truth, hasn't it?
Yes, and it's...
From the very beginning.
And even though there's an awful lot of aerospace engineering and science and physics and stuff out there for people, fantasy grabs people with space, whether it's a religious idea or a cult idea or... They're inspired because nothing else in the world inspires them, and I can certainly understand that. There is so much fantasy and la-la land thinking that it's incredible. And it's not slowing down. It's growing and growing by leaps and bounds.
Yep.
But not tonight. There won't be any wrong thinking. Tonight will be punished.
It will not be allowed.
That's right. Well, we'll punish it like on the old Star Trek shows.
Well, we'll laugh at it derisively. And
so you're heading a track at ISDC, right?
I am not heading the track.
Okay.
No, that track is being headed by someone I will mention a little bit later. His name is Jorgensen from Starbridge Capital. He's also a very successful hedge fund manager in Wisconsin. I'll talk about, there's some interesting stuff that he's doing that correlates with what I'm doing, so I'll touch on that a little bit later. It's being co-run by Steve Jorgensen and Cliff McMurray.
Okay,
well, friend of both of us.
Yeah, Cliff, of course, is in Oklahoma City, so.
Yeah, so they'll be he and Claire will be driving to the conference. I'll be going out Wednesday afternoon. So here's what's going on. In our last exciting episode, we had to have a parting of the ways between the New Space Business Plan competition itself as a project of the Space Frontier Foundation and the foundation itself. They decided about a year and a half ago they didn't want to do BPCs anymore. They wanted to, go in different directions. Okay, that's fine. Long story short, we spent a little time picking up the pieces and gathering ourselves and figure out, well, what the heck do we really want to do? Yeah, we still want to do a BPC. We think it's relevant. We think it's important. We think it generates a lot of excitement. And in the end, a nice chunk of cash for somebody. And that encourages more players to come in and keep presenting. So what we did first, we created essentially a new owner organization for which the BPC is one of its projects, and that's called the Center for Space Commerce and Finance. As we touched on briefly earlier, it's based in Sugarland, Texas. That's where we're registered. And it's also, like your group, it's a 501c3. In fact, we're just kind of having our coming out party this week, and we're starting a major fundraise, and we're doing this big event at ISDC to promote the new BPC, and we're raising money for that as well. We got some folks on the hook. We're doing some negotiations, so I can't mention a big number yet, but we're getting there. We're getting close to that announcement really quickly. But what we are doing is something I started about a year ago, and we're doing. But it's something I've always wanted to do with the BPC, and we're doing it again. And it's called regional competition events. And we had our first one for this kind of campaign season, if you'd like to put it that way, in early March in Salt Lake City at an accelerator called Boom Startup. And we got some really good competition in there. The guy was the guy Rob Coons runs it, and he's had about 800 companies come through his program over the years. He's been doing this for a long, long time. Great guy. And so he set the bar really high. We have people come in. There is only a handful, of competitors. And the idea is whoever wins a regional competition, they get a little $2,500 check sponsored by Highline Prize Trust and get to be a finalist for a big BPC that would be held as part of the New Worlds Conference that Rick Tomlinson runs in Austin in the middle of November.
Okay.
So that is also the new home for the event itself. The main event itself is the New Worlds Conference.
So then what are you doing at ISDC?
Okay, we are doing a second event. We're doing our second regional event as part of the business track at ISDC. It will start at, I think, 10 a.m. on Friday, the 26th. We already have five finalists. They will get a chance to do a regular pitch like we do at the big BBC. They have their 7 minutes to do a pitch. It got 7 minutes of Q&A from the judges, and, ding, next.
So so the one in St. Louis, is that like the central states region, or how does that work?
Part of the work that the center wants to do is this happened to be associated with ISDC, kind of not so much by happenstance, but by it was an opportunity. So they graciously allowed us to come in and do our event as part of ISDC. But the greater goal here is to start establishing relationships with the local accelerator communities. In all sorts of regions. And St. Louis is really great. They have a lot of great stuff in aerospace and in other technology. And there's a lot of great accelerators and some excellent people. In fact, to that end, I want to touch very briefly. We just did a press release today and about the judges. I want to talk just very briefly, let you know. These are the quality of the people that are, like, judging our competition event. a guy named Mark Allen. Now, he has crafted programs to create and build professional development education for business. He delivered a Kauffman Fast Track program to 900 adult learners and conducted education programs for 1,900 participants at all the learning levels. But he's also served as a CEO for a holding company that drove revenues of $100 million and built profits that actually exceeded $5 million annually. And he's a managing director right now for WRS Solutions, which is a business development agency in Kansas City, but they have an office in St. Louis as well. Our second judge is Ken Harold. He's an interesting guy. He created one of the first CAD and 3D graphic building information management systems for the architectural industry. And so he's really tech sector, and he was a founding executive director of the what they call the Building Smart Alliance. So he teaches innovation in the schools of engineering at St. Louis University, which is a great school for engineering apparently. And he's helped companies and over 65 startups with business modeling and ideation and application of design thinking. And then our third judge will be Dan Royce, and he's just kind of this. Oh, I don't know, shit disturber, innovator kind of guy who just gets in there and helps people find their audience and their potential by simplifying their own innovation, exploring their out-of-the-box ideas, and he helps them develop ecosystems of stakeholders, change managers, and provides incentive to accelerate innovation. So he produces innovation programs, writes, speaks, consults, and he started a company called Openly Disruptive, if that tells you anything. He's developed learning, marketing, and entertainment programs for Fortune 100 firms. This is going to be a lot of fun with guys like that as judges for this event.
Are the five semifinalists' business plans up on a website?
They are not. Not right yet. We're just getting they're not. In the regional events, we're not doing full business plans. We're just doing two- or three-page executive summaries. We've already gone through our own. We have our own inherent filtering system that we use to go through that. We have a point schedule system that we use. And so of the bunch that of those who apply, these top five are really good. But that's what they will see. They will see, the judges will see the executive summaries and any other application materials that come off from the website. We have the newspacebpc.com website where you would apply for these events.
What's the name of the website again?
Newspacebpc.com.
Okay.
One word.
Okay. And so that's going to be pretty much all day then, right?
That's going to be in the morning.
Okay.
Event, and then... After that, we'll probably, the judges will be sequestered, of course. They'll take them, we'll probably cater in a lunch or something. Whatever long it takes them to make a decision, we'll probably announce it sometime in the late afternoon at the end of the day of the business track. Because the other half of the day is kind of a show and tell, pitches from various, early to medium stage companies. In the aerospace arena to show show off what they're doing, and I will be presenting during that afternoon my own company called Avialto.
And this is for orbital platforms, right?
Yes, it is. This is for high altitude platforms. People have been working on high altitude platforms for a long, long time, and this is kind of an idea whose time has come, I think. But just before we get to that, I just want to get back very, very quickly. I talked about the judges. I also want to mention very briefly, if you're in the St. Louis area or nearby and you're thinking about attending ISDC and our event for some reason might interest you, I would highly encourage you to attend. In fact, I sent a link to David. I hope he can put it up on the website. NSS actually did a Groupon for day passes or weekend passes for ISDC conference. And instead of the usual $100, day pass price is only $45 with the Groupon. And that's still up and running on the Groupon website. groupon.com/deals/International Space Development Conference. I hope we can put a link to that somewhere.
I'll put it in the archive segment.
Great.
Summary of the show, but once the show is archived, you can also post it if you want as a comment. Actually,
great.
We could do that now if you wanted to.
Yeah, I just wanted to push that. I just want to push that a little bit. I appreciate it.
Okay, so this is so it looks like you've got a really good sale price going.
Yeah, yeah. So for those walk-in guys who decided at the last second, I want to see that business plan competition. I want to see that program. Come on in, go to Groupon, get your coupon, and you can come right on in. You'll have a badge and everything.
It'll
be a really good show, and I think you're going to enjoy it. There's going to be a lot of networking opportunity as well.
What is Groupon? It's just a website?
Yeah, Groupon, Groupon. You don't know what Groupon is?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Techie savvy.
It's a promotional site, and every type of different company can have some really good promotions on products and services just to try them out.
Okay, cool.
So everything from a ticket to ISDC to one of those, like, you can go out and take a car out in the track for a fraction of the price. You know, one of those
cool
race car things.
Yeah.
I mean, every restaurant you can think of does these things. You know, tours to exotic places, sports events, musical events.
Okay.
They pretty much do it all, so...
Okay, so listeners, if you haven't registered and you want to do it and get a good price, the link will be embedded in the body of the summary of this show, and it will also be posted on a blog comment.
Yeah. So just before we move on, just a brief word now about the center itself, because we just started this thing, but we're pretty ambitious, and we're putting up some white papers, and we offer some services. As far as we want to do online boot camps, we want to help you do your pitch event. We're going to be working with other groups to, again, help network and help fund. One of the biggest things we're doing is going to be this weekend with the local accelerators in St. Louis. So we want to establish, everywhere we go and do these events, we're doing it to establish relationships that will go and expand and grow way beyond that particular event. And, of course, one of the things we want to do, because we refer to it, you know, colloquially as the center. We want to be the center of all these things. So a center of connectedness and a center of funding. That takes me back to our friend Steve Jorgensen. He's working with Scott Livingston Securities to put together what they call the Starbridge Venture Capital Fund. They hope to launch it in a couple months. And they want to raise as much as between 50 and 100 million. And this would go to help fund early and mid-stage up to a round of space related and space scalable companies. They like the concept, and they want to have a long working relationship with the center, because our idea is we're going to have a lot of great looking early stage companies come through our programs, either in the boot camps or in the regional events. And we want to be able to allow them kind of first crack at cherry picking the companies that go through there and taking a longer look at them for investment purposes.
Is this like your old original idea of the Colony Fund?
It's not quite the same thing. It's kind of like, you know, Colony Fund 2.0. So I'm happy to be an advisor on that. I'm happy. I mean, I think the stars are really in alignment on all this now. We were so ahead of our time, as you know, looking back on it.
Absolutely.
But now it's here. And I'm just glad to be living in this time. I can still see some of those crazy ideas I had back in 1999 finally turn into something.
Absolutely. The Colony Fund was way ahead of its time. It should have been embraced, but...
That's okay.
It wasn't
coming
ready.
Back with, you know, new owners and a better attitude. So I'm thrilled.
Good for that.
I can be a part of this.
Good for that. Anything else at ISDC that has your interest?
I have. I'll know when I get there. Honestly, we've been so focused on putting this event together and doing it right. And I guess I should do a plug for our executive director at the center, Joel Venus.
Okay, so why do a plug for Joel?
Well, because he has been tireless. I just want to give him a shout out because this guy's been a tireless advocate. He was always my logistics guy for the previous BPCs, and now we've offered him, you know, this higher role, and he's really stepped up and gone the extra mile to make everything just work out perfectly. And so I just want to publicly thank him for that.
Okay, yeah.
And he'll still be working hard at the conference itself, so I'm looking forward to working with him.
Yeah, he was instrumental with the new space business plan with the Space Frontier Foundation.
Absolutely.
So glad that he's still involved.
So I got that core team together. It was like we put the band back together. It was great. But now we're on this bigger platform that the center wants to do. The BPC is now a project of the center, and the center wants to do a lot more things than that. Right now we're really focused on BPC and cranking that back up and getting it back to a place of prominence, which we are going to do. But we also want to move ahead and have a more service-based approach, a big networking approach, and we're going to do our own Space Scalable conference next year. That's another big goal that we have.
You have an email from a listener. Are you ready for this one?
Okay.
Josh is in Tucson.
Okay.
And he says, in all of the business plan competitions that you have done, do you have any stats on the winners or partial winners that at least got something out of it? What they did with the money, did they follow through on their plans? Did their plans become big businesses? Did they fail? What can you tell us about some of the creative business plans that won and got money? How did they all turn out?
Well, it's interesting. It's kind of a mixed bag. Some of these companies did really well. I think one of our first big winners, Altius Space Machines, is still doing some really, really excellent work, and they've taken their sticky boom technology and some other things that they've worked on, and they're getting flight opportunities to IFS and other opportunities working with on joint projects with other great players in the industry. That company is doing really well. One of the companies that did not actually win a prize one year, they were just out of the money on that one, but still from the contacts they made, did really, really well. It's a company called NanoSatisfy. They are now known as Spire. And one of the judges from that year's competition actually worked with them to help them complete their first funding round. And so because of contacts the Spire people made at that event, they become the company they are now, or at least we help them.
Yeah.
So companies like I don't have these companies on the top. I should have made a list. I should have prepared for
that. Yeah, and I was there at those, and I can't remember all the companies either.
Yeah, but I'm sure Joel has it written down. But most of the companies that won money did well with it, and they are doing well continuously. It was mostly especially the ones that were solving some small rocket problem or...
Oh, I know one that did well. I think Frontier Design for...
Final Frontier Design.
Final Frontier.
Another one, Peter Homer.
Yeah, Peter did well up at the Brooklyn Naval Yard, and he's got, I believe, some contracts and is doing well.
And he actually won not one, but two NASA glove competitions. He finally had to do something with him after winning the second one.
So and he presented at the business plan competition.
He did.
And has been a guest on the show a couple of times.
Oh, yeah. He's in great stuff.
But I like you, I don't remember all of them.
And it's also time kind of does that for you as well.
But other stuff is going on at ISDC, but you're just not involved with it, right?
I just haven't been involved with it. I've been focusing on that. I got to finish my slideshow. I haven't done that yet. Promising Cliff, I'd finish it. So it's going to be my focus for the next couple of days, getting that done.
Is your talk going to I know ISDC's not recording and streaming anything, but is any of this going to be recorded and later archived or streamed off of your website?
I believe we've got a crew together. Joel, again, he put a crew together to actually do, I don't know if it's going to be live streaming, but we are going to do some great video from the event. the morning event.
And is that going to go up on your website?
Sure it will. Absolutely.
So if you let me know when it's up there, I'll share it with the listeners.
Okay.
Let's go to high altitude.
Okay.
So what is, define high altitude.
Okay, high altitude platforms ideally are things that float at about between 80 and 100,000 feet. There's this great sweet spot in the upper atmosphere where there's not a lot of wind. But there's no weather because it's above all the weather. It's very clear. You got a lot of sunshine. And it's been a dream for a long time that a platform could be built that would just float up there and station keep and provide and carry an electronics platform very similar to that of a communication satellite. Only because it's so much closer to the Earth, you can move a lot more bandwidth, 10 times the bandwidth than you can coming back and forth. You don't have all that attenuation going from, say, GEO and back. So you can move a lot more bandwidth, and you can do a lot of other types of support services like mobile backhaul and all sorts of things, even imagery, high-res imagery. And people have been working on this for a long time. Eurozone, they've been working on it all the way back in the 90s. A lot of these things were being built. The ESA did a project. And it's usually either a balloon or a dirigible kind of thing, or in some cases an actual lightweight aircraft. And even, for example, Facebook is working on something like this. They want to do a solar-powered aircraft that would deliver broadband service. Of course, Elon Musk and OneWeb want to launch, you know, up to 4,000 satellites to provide this kind of service. That's going to cost billions of dollars and take, you know, years to achieve. In the meantime, I mean, if we tried to do that, what we're attempting 10 years ago, we probably wouldn't have done it because the materials weren't there. Right now, we're at this convergence. All the dots are connecting with really lightweight but very, very strong materials. Very thin film solar cells that provide a lot of power, new batteries that are lightweight but pack the same amount of power, and new designs in telecommunications technology. And we're running usually the KU and KA bands and the C band, the same radio frequency they're using.
Now, this is all autonomous. There's no humans up there.
There are no humans up there. But according to, depending on what rules regime you use in the U.S. in particular, there's going to have to be some sort of remote pilot. It's still, because these things basically float like a balloon, but they still have some fancy high-end propellers on them just to do station keeping. I mean, the motors aren't very big. They're like 24-volt DC motors, and the propellers themselves are actually designed and patented to work only at those upper altitudes. So,
so everything is automated.
Everything's automated, and our goal is to have something up there that they can station keep for 6 months, and then there'd be send another one up and do a handoff, and then bring the first one down for servicing.
Okay, so they have a six-month life expectancy before they get service.
Right. That's the goal. We'll see how well we achieve that.
When is your rollout date?
Okay. Now, that's a good question, because right now we're doing a series of kind of sub-sized vehicles and working up to it. Our commercial vehicle is probably going to end up between 55 and 60 meters long. Our development partner is JP Aerospace.
Okay.
And right now, and you know JP.
Yeah.
Something's, hold on. Something weird is going on.
Are you getting noise in the background?
I'm getting, Siri's trying to tell me something, and I have no idea.
Yeah, so we're picking up that somebody's talking in the background.
Yeah, that was Siri trying to tell me something, and I don't know why. I didn't ask her anything.
Maybe
they're trying to update me, through the back end.
Here. I don't know. Mute the phone.
Right. Okay, well, the JP Aerospace is our development partner. They've been building, every type of floating device for 39 years now.
Uh-huh.
We've already had the original test of the configuration. The configuration looks something like an arrowhead with a blunt nose. It's just two big tubes that are joined together at one end, and there's an angle of about 18 degrees or so between them as it flares out a little bit. And it's built in such a way that it has an aerodynamic kind of airflow that would help it in station keeping, because it's not zero wind at high altitudes. There's going to be some wind. And the configuration allows that wind to flow over it a little better, so the propellers don't have to work so hard.
How are you going to get it up there?
Just right now, the early versions, we're just launching from the ground. JP Aero has a 42-acre launching space in the Black Rock Desert near Lovelock, Nevada. They call it Area 42. And there's some facility there, and more is being built as these things get bigger. To test the configurations, we've already launched an 8-meter system and an 11-meter system. I was there in September for the 11-meter. But what they're building right now is the full prototype for the entire platform, where we'll also test the electronics. The electronic systems are being built in the UK. And so over the summer, starting probably next month and over the summer, we're going to be testing not only the configuration but the electronics platforms to make sure everything works the way we want it to. So ideally, when we're done ringing this thing out, it'll just be a matter of scaling up to build the commercial version.
And who is a customer for this?
Okay, the customer can be a cable company. The customer can be a big corporation like Microsoft who wants emergency backup.
Backup of what?
Their internet, their entire internal system, their communications internally. If there's a natural disaster of some kind and the terrestrial-based stuff goes out.
Okay. So somebody could back up their connections if they wanted. So this would be the super cloud. This would actually be in the cloud.
Yep. Yeah, literally. Actually, above the cloud.
Above the cloud, yeah.
Above the cloud. There's a lot of different uses for altitude platforms.
That's your marketing slogan.
Yeah.
Using the cloud as old hat. We're above the cloud.
That's right.
Check us out.
That's right.
So when do you think, if everything goes right, you will have your first round of commercial customers?
That'll probably be early next year.
Early 2018.
Yeah, because right now, again, the prototype platform is being assembled right now. It's 28 meters, that platform.
This is your demo platform.
It's our demo platform. It's about half size. So we ring out all the systems on that platform. We're going to fly it probably 5-7 times. Given John's previous experience with multiple flights, the first flight will be pretty kind of wretched, but that's where you get all the bugs out. But then the second flight will be brilliant, and subsequent flights will be really good too. And on the subsequent flights, that's where we're going to start testing our electronic platform. We'll get it up to about 36,000 feet and really start doing some testing on the communications capabilities. Because that's a completely different set of requirements than just the flight.
Sarah's in Denver and sent an email and says, how are you getting funding for your startup venture, and any idea how you're going to price your services?
Okay. We just completed an early stage funding round from some private equity folks for about $3 million late last fall. And that's what we're running on to finish the prototype and get a few flights in. And probably, and we'll also at that point be building the first commercial version. Our goal is to get a flight-ready commercial version by the end of this year. May not fly until next year, but we'll have it. And we have it ready to fly. We've got multiple strategies for the next funding round after that, because that would happen, that would be next. What'll happen is we'll be able to show off a working prototype to the world. It's the pricing, I'm not clear right now how it's going to be completely priced out. I mean, technically we're wholesalers. So once these platforms are in the air, we intend to work with local partners in the underserved areas, and they would retail it out.
Do you need to get FAA licenses or anything to
For the commercial platform, absolutely. We would need what is called a type certification, and that takes a while to get.
So how? What is the coverage distance and how many do you need to cover, say, the central part of the United States, or how are you planning to cover big areas?
Let me phrase it that way. Right now, from the specs we're running with, the coverage area of one of these high altitude platforms, say hovering at about 20 to 25 kilometers, it would have a maximum coverage diameter of about 350 miles on the ground. But depending on topography and a lot of other things, a more realistic coverage area would be about half that, maybe 150, 170 miles. But at that coverage area, if you were in an area that's flat, if you're over the plains, there's no topography.
Then you get bigger area. Probably.
You get a bigger area. It might be back up to 300 miles. We've been talking to somebody in Canada who wants to pursue something like this way up in the northern latitudes where it's just the tundra. But the challenge there, we haven't gotten into it yet because we're just trying to get our prototype off and running. But the challenge up there is there's like 2-3 months out of the year where you don't get any sunlight at all, and our platform will be festooned with solar panels that won't be much use that time of year. And so we're looking at a beamed power option.
Okay.
For that group. We would actually beam power to the platform during the winter months.
That ought to raise the cost a little bit.
It would, but they might be willing to pay for it. We're having that discussion.
You've got another question from Sweden.
Ooh.
So Bijan says, I read here and there that the space industry, he asked this question recently too, but
okay.
I guess he didn't get satisfied.
I'll try.
I read here and there that the space industry somehow is worth $300 billion a year. That's an illusion with a B times 300. With 1,000 active satellites, it's $1 million a day per satellite. So I suspect that something's wrong with this accounting. How many monies do you think that the real space industry is actually revenuing?
Oh, okay. Well, those numbers are based on a lot of different industry analysts, and actually we're very good at what they do. What they're covering is current revenues by very, very established industries like satellite communications. Satellite communications industry makes hundreds of billions of dollars a year, but that's because the satellites are already up there. So when you look at revenues from the people who, for example, you know, take the satellites up there, that might be a different set of equations than the industry as a whole when you factor it all in. So, no, I don't think SpaceX is making, you know, billions and billions a year yet. A lot of launch companies aren't making that kind of money yet. Most of what the analysts are telling you is that those hundreds of billions a year that are coming down from space are coming down from very established industries that already have great infrastructure set up, and that's been generating revenues for a long, long time. It's just been growing slowly over a period of 50 years.
When he asked this question before, and I don't remember who the guest was, but the guest, it was either Bijan who said, or the guest said, that with DirecTV, they count the revenues flowing from their customers watching DirecTV on their sofas, and that is counted as space revenue.
Well,
And I put out a feeler for anyone who really knows how these revenues are accounted for to tell us if that's correct, because it doesn't seem to me like the end user watching DirecTV, that what he's paying for that service is actually a space industry revenue.
Well, that'd be an interesting thing to find out, but it wouldn't surprise me to find out that that's the case.
I wouldn't be surprised either, but I think...
In fact, in the case of a DirecTV customer, if we could provide better quality service at a lower cost with one of our high-altitude platforms, it wouldn't take much work to just kind of re-aim your Dish Network dish about a degree or so, and you'd be connected to our platform instead. And you have a lot less latency and a lot more bandwidth.
Well, that may...
But then, by that, I guess we could consider ourselves to have space revenue as well, right?
Coming from the sofas of America and around the world.
Right.
I guess I'm still hoping that someone who really knows how these numbers are calculated. It's too bad Schubber doesn't listen to the show anymore, because he's the one who did this original kinds of reporting that really broke the industry open and knows this stuff.
Right.
But I don't think that he's involved much with it. Are you still in touch with him?
Oh, rarely. Once in a great while.
I think he's...
He's doing entrepreneurship thing, too, so he's off in another direction.
But not for space, right?
Right.
Yeah, because he even canceled his subscription to the Space Show newsletter, I saw.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't live very far from me, but I know he's got a different direction than space. And he's the founder, by the way, listeners, of Space Cynics.
Yeah.
So anyway, we need to take a break because we're a little past halfway. So listeners, Tom and I are going to take our break. The toll-free number, which we would like to hear from you, and you all can't tell me that you're at work, so why aren't you picking up the phone and calling 1-866-687-7223, and email remains drspace, drspace, at thespaceshow.com. And Bijan just sent in a reply. Let me see if I want to deal with it before the break. He says, yeah, we TV couch armchair astronauts dominate the space economy. Maybe so, Bijan. Maybe in Sweden. I don't know. If you come over here to San Francisco this year to the New Space Conference, you won't find very many sofa couch people, probably, because a lot of them are doing something or claiming to be doing something.
But that's a healthy space cynics attitude. So you know what? He's okay with me.
Are you coming to the New Space Conference?
Probably not. I'm going to be too busy.
It's,
you know, working with these inaugural flights of the prototype. I'm going to be out in the desert a lot.
That's too bad, because it is actually in San Francisco.
Yeah, I know.
And we haven't gotten together in San Francisco since you used to come to Macworld.
Yeah.
And stay over at the wharf or near the wharf or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
All right, listeners, remember our Vietnamese friend? We'll be back in 3 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with The Space Show. Your support of The Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
Welcome back, everybody. Part two of our special Thursday program. Tom Olson is our guest, and before we resume, we do have a couple of short sponsor messages from our corporate sponsor. So Celestis, of course, is the premier memorial spaceflight service, and they are a sponsor. We're very appreciative of that. And they have a lunar memorial spaceflight coming up, and they're taking reservations for their second lunar memorial spaceflight, where it will fly people's cremated remains or their DNA to the moon. Moon Express, when they get going to the moon, is one of the contestants for the Google Lunar X Prize, and they will be carrying memorial remains to the moon. Last year, the U.S. government approved the Moon Express mission to the moon, and then a short time ago, they got its funding for its flight, and they also have the permits for the flight to go to the moon. So Celestis is going to be part of that. The moon is a uniquely compelling location to remember a special life, and then with the DNA program, you can fly your own DNA with your loved one who's passed away and also go to the moon. For a lot more information, check them out at celestis.com. And if anybody does that, you got to let me know, okay? I'd like to know how it works. They're a wonderful company. I really love those guys.
Well, you're not going to get feedback from the customers, Dave.
No, I'm going to get feedback from the people who sent the remains or their DNA to the moon.
That will be specific.
The family people, the survivors.
Yeah.
AIAA is a sponsor, and that's American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. They have over 30,000 individual members. They represent about 88 countries, 95 corporate members. Check them out at AIAA.org and come to their events. And I just registered for Space 2017 in Orlando. If you're going to be in that area or around the Cape at the time of this event, please do let me know. And Orbital ATK is a global leader in aerospace and defense technology. They're the partner you can count on for advanced, reliable space propulsion systems for space exploration, commercial ventures, and defense programs. So Tom and I are going to do something that we haven't done on the Space Show before, and we didn't promote it ahead of time, so we really have no clue if it's going to be a bummer or a grand success, but it is going to be a lightning round. So for those of you listening, you can either call in and do this, or you can email and do this. You can suggest a topic. So this doesn't mean send me two or three lines or five paragraphs. This is like SLS or SLS cost overruns or Orion. Just one, two, three, four words, something like that. And Tom will then pontificate on what you've said for 15 or 20 seconds, and then we'll go to the next one. So if you want to participate in our lightning round trial show, because if it works out, we may do a whole show like this down the road, you can call us. And again, our toll-free is 1-866-687-7223, or you can email us your short term, and that is Dr. Space, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com, or you can use the blog. So that program is available right now if you want to do it, and until we see if anybody wants to participate with us, remember, there's a 3-minute lag from when I say something to when you guys hear it. We'll talk about some other things. So,
yep. Well, we could fall flat in our face in the next 3 minutes. So,
that's right. But I've got some questions that I'm really curious to ask your thoughts about.
Okay.
There is a lot of encouraging talk from space advocates and other people, thinking that we already have, or we are going to have, a brand new space policy of returning to the moon and getting to the moon with humans pretty quickly. Although none of this is cast in gold or platinum or silver or copper or anything. There's no program. There's no funding for it. But there is rhetoric flowing around, like dust particles in the air in my house when my dog walks by. So your thoughts, are we going to see, now I know Trump's got his hands full with all sorts of crap, and the country is in chaos in many different ways. But in your opinion, do you think we will see a policy sometime very soon about going back to the moon?
You know what? I'll believe the rhetoric when I see the money. It's really that simple. I mean, you're talking about, it's great rhetoric.
Oh, yeah, it's encouraging.
About time we revived the space program. Zubrin said this, 20 years ago. If we're going to have a space program at all and spend money on it, it should go someplace. And so I get it. People are really hard-pressed. They want to go back to the moon. They want to go on to Mars. They want to do these things. We've been talking about that, David, you and I, since I first started coming on this show, which is, 2002 or something?
16 years ago.
Yeah. So we've been talking about this for a long, long time. So rhetoric is great. Show me the money. Show me who's going to do it. And you want to talk about who's setting policy right now. It's Elon Musk is setting the policy.
So, in your opinion, are we going back to the moon sometime soon?
I think somebody's going back to the moon sometime soon. It may not be who you think it might be.
Now, in terms of would it be somebody, are you thinking an American entrepreneur like maybe Bezos or Musk, or are you thinking maybe more on the order of China?
Both. I'm thinking exactly what I'm thinking of. Yes, is the answer to that question.
So any of those three?
China's going there. They've said it publicly, and they're marshaling their resources. And I see articles, I go to Space Daily, and I see articles every day almost about, Chinese developments and this, that, and the other. I mean, they're serious.
Yeah, I think they are, too.
They're going there.
And they don't have all the Congress to deal with in funding issues.
Yeah, and Musk and Bezos are essentially a private space race to do all sorts of things. And no one has stepped up in the Congress or anywhere else and said, no, you can't do that.
No, they might.
I don't want to tempt anyone, but,
So another thing I hear from various people, Bob Zimmerman is one of the main proponents, and that is that eventually SLS is going to get canceled. It's a non-starter financially.
Oh, well, I was hoping that would be one of my lightning round things because Orion's, they spent billions on Orion alone. It's like $8 billion has been spent on Orion. And I think the entire early development program for up through Falcon 9 and the early Dragon capsule was a tenth of that. It was like $800 million.
Yeah, but of course their characteristics and capabilities are vastly different.
True, but is Orion 10 times a better capsule?
The only other
10 times the money.
No, probably not. But also, Musk has gotten a lot of non-cash support from NASA.
Oh, sure.
That has saved him an enormous amount of money in the development process.
We could go on about that, too.
But there's no doubt his development costs are cheaper per unit than SLS and
sure.
But look, I think it's really unfair to compare a private project to a government project because their accounting and everything they do and why they do it are vastly different.
And
they don't they don't necessarily care about efficiency with the government. Maybe
well,
they
it,
should.
But it's also still the costs do matter eventually. And someone has to get down this, you know, what is the bang for the buck?
Well,
that's
right.
For building big things and throwing them at Mars.
You still have to have a cost-benefit analysis for your government project.
Yeah.
So that's where the costs matter. But to compare them across the board to a private sector project, I think is unfair. But you still have to be able to show that the taxpayers are getting bang for their buck.
Well, look, John Strickland did that landmark analysis about a year and a half ago that said right up front that the minimum bang for the buck for the SLS Orion combo is going to be at least one launch a year, and it's going to be $1 billion a launch. Now, last time I checked, SpaceX advertises their prices, and as soon as they demonstrate two Falcon 9s together will ship the payload as a single SLS launch for a fraction of the collective cost.
But, you know, I had a guest on a week ago, Dr. Mary Lynn Dittmar. You may know her.
Yeah.
And you know, she said, look, you can't make these comparisons because SLS is a national prestige item, and she then showed how that prestige is valued and what it means with other countries. And it's a workforce project.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, she went through the public attributes of it. So the Falcon 9 is a bottom-line project. You know, it's going to make SpaceX money and their investors money.
But in some ways, Ms. Dittmar is making my point for me. And so this is why, you know, many critics, including myself, have referred to this project as Apollo 1 Viagra.
Well, you know, if all of the payoffs are there that Mary Lynn talked about on the public side, then I guess taxpayers would have to decide if those public payoffs were worth doing the project. And if they like that, then they would obviously vote and letter write for people to continue the project. If they didn't think the payoff was there, they'd want to cancel it and support people who didn't want to support it.
Well, it's just that, I mean, we keep beating this horse. And every time I'm on almost. And my biggest concern, well, not a fear, it's a concern, is that they're going to put so much money into this that they won't be able to get out until they've done something with it. And by the time they actually use that thing to get to Mars, Elon will have been there 5 years already, and he'll be checking everybody's passports.
Well, I don't know if he will have been there 5 years already,
but this is our history. Our history of our government going all the way back to the Erie Canal has been a history of getting involved with, you know, certain crony contractors, getting involved in transportation systems and building infrastructure with their crony partners, and then not being able to understand when, you know, the cost benefit doesn't work anymore and it's time to kind of cut your loss and go on to the next thing. So they hung on to canals a lot longer than they should have, and then they got involved in railroads, and then they got involved in other transportation systems, and now they're doing it with space launch. There's been a history of this going back a couple of centuries.
And the interesting thing to me is that the freshmen that come into Congress each year or each time we have an election, and they probably don't know crap about any of this, you know.
Of course not.
And they end up all of a sudden voting the way you're talking about historically.
Yep.
And so I'm really curious. I'd like to know the process of what it is that you take someone who wins an election and really doesn't know anything about space per se. I mean, maybe a few of them do. Certainly doesn't know anything about what we're talking about Falcon 9 versus SLS or anything like that. And they end up going along and perpetuating these spending programs. Is it that their parties tell them they have to do it? Is their committee chairmen tell them? I mean, there's something that takes these unknowing freshmen and contaminates them somehow.
Well, I think it's the town. It's the nature of the town itself.
And by the way, it's not just about space and rockets.
Right. I think it's the town eats you alive. You come in there, this naive guy with his eyes wide open, or her eyes, and and you're looking to do some interesting things and make some moves, and then you start getting these advisors, and then the lobbyists show up, and they tell you a story. They tell you a song and dance, and next thing you know, you're voting with the older guys on the same old, same old.
So that is, I guess, the swamp we hear about.
So this is if you're really interested in those particular issues, you better really, excuse my French, know your shit before you get in there, so you know who to blow off when they're knocking at your door.
And apparently, that's very, very hard to do.
Yeah. And that's why we have powerful senators like Shelby or Bill Nelson that can keep old space projects employing the same old space people for decades on end, and we don't get a lot of progress. Our national industry in this area is kind of hamstrung by that, and we can't be as nimble and as innovative as we'd like to be.
Okay, Sandra in Berkeley, across the field from me, says, will the recreation of the National Space Committee that the Vice President is going to chair be a solution to these problems? Space Council,
good
by
question.
The way.
Too early to tell. I've read some stuff about that. It did have some valid use during the Apollo era and beyond, and then they just kind of let it go. Because, policy wasn't really going anywhere.
By the way, it hasn't started up yet. The vice president as chairman of it, I don't even know who's on it.
Well, the vice president's always been the chairman of something revolving space.
Right.
It's been the traditional.
But who's on the
national jobs? I don't know. Their names have been bandied about, but they were names that were being bandied about for the transition, for the Trump transition team. And I don't know if the same names are going to be looked at again for this new committee.
Maybe they'll contact me through the space show. What do you think?
Yeah, there you go. I mean, yeah.
I wonder what they pay and what kind of benefits.
Yeah, I'll do it. I have some things to say.
I'll do it for pay and benefits.
There you go.
This is not going to be, I've done my share of freebies for the space community. It's time for payback, so to speak.
That's right.
Listen, at the taxes I pay, I've done my share of stuff for the U.S. government, too. So it's time to really ask, what's my government going to do for me? I know JFK is probably turning in his grave over that one, but
that's true.
What the heck? So another question to ask you, kind of along the side on the policy side, a hot issue that we get on the space show is this whole idea of planetary protection and humans not being permitted to land in desirable spots on Mars for fear of contamination and cross-contamination, for science purposes. And it's in the Outer Space Treaty. It's Article 9 in the Outer Space Treaty.
Now, what's the issue they're concerned most about?
Well, they'll be
protecting us from Mars microbes or protecting Mars microbes from us?
Both. So they don't want our presence on Mars to contaminate potential microbes on Mars, or to ruin Mars for science study and exploration.
Uh-huh.
And they're concerned about the Andromeda strain affecting our astronauts and coming back to Earth.
Yeah. Well, you see a lot of horror movies about stuff like that.
It was a cool movie, though.
Oh, it was. And so will Alien Covenant be when it comes out. here's the thing, and this is... this overprotectedness may be overblown. I mean, I'm speaking, I don't have a PhD, but at least I am a trained, degreed scientist, and I do, I do know how to read a peer-reviewed research paper. I understand the zeal about going kind of overboard on planetary protection, because really you just don't know. And so in the early phases of Mars exploration, it pays to be very, very careful. But beyond that, I mean, my hope is that they don't find a damn thing.
You don't want there to be life on Mars?
No, I don't want to. I want us to bring life to Mars and bring Mars to life. I mean, that's been the goal of a lot of the Mars people for decades, is this is the ideal place to play and at terraforming. And we're going to learn so much. We're going to learn quantum levels of knowledge through the terraforming of Mars about how we keep the Earth healthy and our and all the species alive. I think it would be the most noble thing humanity collectively could ever do. So my long and fervent emotional hope, when I let emotion come into it, is I hope Mars is just dry and dusty and it's got nothing on it. And we're going to bring it to life. Now, Europa, on the other hand, I'm thinking, I want to see what happens when a probe goes there. I'd love to see a teeming ecosystem that's totally alien underneath that ice. And we'll have stuff to keep scientists busy for centuries.
Well, we're not really planning on putting people on Europa.
No, that's the whole thing.
Or Titan or Enceladus. Those are the other three areas that have some potential. So does Ceres, but that's a long ways out.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't want there to be... What about past life? Would you be okay if they found past life on Mars?
That has something to teach us, yes. I mean, there was that controversial Mars rock they found in Antarctica a couple of decades ago that hinted that there might have been some at least microscopic...
Fossil life or something.
Single-celled life. As we expand out into the solar system and or the rest of the galaxy, we may find that that's kind of a default thing. Anything that can harbor any kind of, single-celled life forms may be very, very common out across the galaxy if the planet it's coming from is in the habitable zone. We were finding out a lot more about all sorts of extrasolar planets right now, so it leads to a lot of speculation and a lot of imagination.
I have a lightning round contestant for you.
Okay.
So Todd is in San Diego, and so his term is too much or too little astronaut safety.
Oh, okay. I would say... I would have to say, in the case of NASA astronauts, probably too little, and private astronauts, probably too much. And it sounds odd to me, but I keep hearing all these horror stories about people going out on EVAs now in old broken down spacesuits from ISS. And one guy was in danger of drowning because something, the water coolant system broke. His helmet was filling up.
Yeah, that was a year ago or so.
Yeah. And so not enough is being done to take care of the astronauts that are on the public payroll. But for the private guys, they're not risk averse. So there's a danger that, you're taking a little too much risk, and maybe you should do some double checking on what you're building.
Most people think NASA is too risk averse, so you don't think that?
I'm looking at the evidence. I used to think that a lot about a lot of different things, and they have a different standard that they are forced to live by because they're doing these things on the public dime, and there's a much greater consequence of failure in their world.
I have another lightning round for you.
Okay.
I don't know how you're going to answer this one, and I'm debating.
It's an experiment.
It is an experiment. I'm debating on whether to even go down this road. We have about 8 minutes left. What the hell? Andrew is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and it's a little bit longer, but he does preface by saying lightning round. So he says, space settlement requires, ultimately for a settlement, families, children, things that are more normal in a settlement, not just adults going there who will eventually age and die. So your opinion on sex in space and childbirth and bringing up children in space to live on a space settlement?
Okay. Again... From what you and I have heard over the years, I'm pretty much convinced that sex in space has already happened. I don't care what the official agency's stories are. Sex in space has already happened.
Who with? Do you know who did it?
No. And if I did, I wouldn't say on the public airwaves. But it's the consequences that we have to deal with. And there's a lot of issues. There are things we just don't know concerning the human physiological response to, I mean, forget microgravity. We probably don't even want to try that in microgravity as far as having children is concerned. But even on reduced gravity situations like Mars, which is 0.39, can you conceive and give birth to a healthy, normal child? How will they grow up? Will they get taller because of the lower, you know, the reduced gravity? Will other physiological problems happen to them? Will they live to adulthood? These are questions we don't know. And I remember way back when you and I were going to Mars Society conferences, they actually talked about a Mars gravity biosatellite, which would have been filled with mice under centripetal acceleration to simulate Mars gravity, and then you just put the satellite up there for a few months and let the mice do what mice will do. And then we see the results. That project was first proposed in 2001. It should have flown three times by now. I'm just amazed that no one's picked it up.
It's never been flown.
No. Or even
proposed,
built.
Really. Yeah.
Yeah.
So a big unknown is what you're saying.
It's a big unknown, and it's going to be, we need more data. We need a lot more data. If even Elon Musk, and he is really hot to trot, he wants to get out there, but even he has to admit to himself that there are so many unknowns in getting people out there that quickly, and we're not going, our research level as it's going right now is not going to keep up with his ambition.
Another lightning round question for
sure.
You. So Beverly, and Beverly is in Oklahoma City,
okay.
And she said, your choice, lunar tourism, one-way trip to Mars, which would you do?
Me?
Yeah.
I was a little younger, I guess, you know.
Well, she didn't say anything about your age.
Okay. Well, actually, here's a couple caveats. I would pick one-way trip to Mars.
So you would leave everything behind?
Yeah, but not my wife.
Well, you'd have to take her with you?
I have to take her with me, or for some reason she's no longer with us, and I was...
What about your daughter?
On my own. My daughter's on her own. She would understand. We would have that conversation. And we would still be able to have to communicate.
Would your wife want to go to Mars?
No. No. I know that for a fact.
So, but you would actually go on a one-way trip to Mars?
Yeah. I consider it, yes. Rather than lunar tourism, I don't know. Now, it might be if I do really well with Ave Alto and another company that I'm involved with, I'd actually be able to afford lunar tourism. But Mars has always fascinated me a lot more since I was a young kid. So,
so Mars is it for you?
Yeah, it would be it for me. If I had to take ultimates and there are no other, you know, personal consequences involved.
Interesting. I have one listener. Do you know Doug Plata? Dr. Doug is what we call him.
I'm sorry, that name escapes me.
He, along with Madhu of USC, who you probably know.
Yeah.
They think there's going to be a big market for retirement centers on the moon and Mars. So would you retire to a retirement center? Maybe on an O'Neillian station on orbit, too.
Well, that would be kind of cool because you can, on an O'Neillian type station, you can at least adjust, you know, the gravity because, yeah, you know, down at the flatlands, it'd probably be one Earth G, but you can go up onto you can kind of walk up onto the dome side and, you know, the spin gravity drops a little bit. So you can pick your gravitational force that fits your state of physical health.
So
that might be interesting.
So you might be open-minded about a retirement center.
Yeah.
I kind of joke with them about it and tease them about it.
I'm just not sure if it'll be built in time for me.
Well, lunar tourism might not be in time for you if somebody doesn't start doing something other than talking about it.
Right. Well, I did go back to the gym.
We're blowing it out.
You know,
there's an awful lot of pontification in our community, to say the least, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, that will never change. Maybe it shouldn't.
We're getting pretty close to the end of our 90-minute episode. So you got a couple of lightning round emails.
Yeah, that was kind of a fun.
That might be fun.
We'll think about that some more.
If we market it ahead of time,
yeah,
and let people know about it, and I kept repeating it on upcoming shows.
Did a lot of prepping,
and prepping it. It might work out okay.
Well, it might be sure.
Listeners who hear this on the blog, if you think a lightning round show like we just kind of did would be fun with your emails and phone calls, tell us one way or another, and if you'd like to see that, or if you think we should stay away from it. Anything else you want to tell us? Have we forgotten to ask you something? Is there something that you want to remind us to do? You want to give everybody your cell phone number so they can find you at ISDC?
No, that I'm not going to do. But,
okay, so, but he will be there, listeners, and if you see him, go up and talk to him and tell him you listen to him on the space show.
I am always open to meeting people, and I go to these conferences. I get approached a lot, so yeah, I will be at ISDC. Now that thing you were doing with it down in Orlando, because we've been negotiating to do a Orlando regional event. I wonder if it'd be in association with that.
I don't know. They're probably, if they're not already booked and figured out and, you know, put together, they're getting close to that point.
Okay. What's this thing called again?
It's AIAA.
Oh, it's AIAA. Okay.
Yeah, so it's right, Space 27 in Orlando, and it's in September. So do you have an AIAA contact?
I'll ask. I will find out.
Because if you don't, I do.
Okay.
And so ask me, and I'll be happy to share my contact. It's at the Hyatt. I don't know if it's the Hyatt Regency or one of the other. There's other kinds of Hyatts.
It's good timing for that too. So Joel, if you're listening, he said he's going to listen this evening.
Okay, but if you don't have an AIAA contact, send me a note, and I'll introduce you to my guy.
But that brings up that last little thing. I mean, we do want to do we're working on an Orlando event. We're also working on a Seattle event.
Okay, I don't have contacts really for Seattle.
Time.
But
so that's a separate thing. I'm going to say that's in the pipeline, and something that's really 50-50, but something, I'm working on is a potential for an event in Adelaide, Australia.
Australia, okay.
That's that would be in conjunction with the IAC.
So do you have
in late September.
Do you have Australian contacts?
I do.
Okay. What about West Coast other than Seattle?
Not in the pipeline right now.
Okay. Well, you know a lot of people in California, too.
Absolutely.
So. All right. Well, I hope to see you someplace at something in the near future. So I'm sorry you won't be at New Space.
Yeah.
Because you usually do come to New Space.
I do, but they moved it to June. I mean, this is the timing.
You know,
we're going to be flying. We're going to be flying in June. We have the big 60-meter platform, that's being designed and worked on very carefully under the type certification regulatory regime with FAA. I just got out of that meeting with the FAA this last Tuesday. And so, but the 28-meter and those that might follow that are done under an experimental aircraft regime, which means we can experiment. We can get stuff in the air quickly. And that's what we're focused on now. But those flights are going to happen in probably that June, July time frame.
Well, and New Space has really been changing. The executives and management keep changing every year now. So it's all new people again running it. So
right,
it's not what it was when we were involved. But our generation got ousted from it. So
Yeah, and they've gone a lot more corporate. And so if that's working for them, that's great.
And they're getting a lot more younger people associated with it. So.
But it's funny that a lot of the old line guys that were kind of moving away from them or coming heading towards our organization.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
So there's a wealth of experience that we're bringing in.
Now, I have a shout-out to do.
Okay.
Okay. A very close friend of the Space Show, and I hope to bring him back on the show in the near future, has sent out a retirement note. So Dallas Benhoff has retired from Boeing. Yes, and I wish him all the very, very best in whatever he takes on to do in his new retired life. And I hope he can come on the Space Show far more frequently than he could when he was working with Boeing. Dallas is a great guy, a real committed, factual guy in commercial space and new space.
He's an amazing guy. I have all sorts of ideas for his retirement.
Well,
if I see him, so if he's listening, I'll do a shout out back too. If you go to ISDC, I want to talk to you.
Well, I'm going to forward you his retirement message.
Okay.
I'm sure he won't mind. What email address? Should I use the Esprit one?
You can use that one, or you can use actually anybody can have this one and get a hold of me. I know your customers. It's a TAO
Tau one that I
know. At CSCF.space.
Oh, I don't know that one.
That's a new one.
At CS.space?
CSCF.space, Center for Space Commerce and Finance.
Okay, CSCF.space.
Yep.
How is our friend Walt doing?
He's great. I just saw him on Tuesday.
Please give him my regards and wish him well. He may be at New Space, and if he is, I'll look forward to seeing him.
Yeah, I think he's going to be. So yeah, he's
okay. So it's
TAO.
Okay.
Dow at CSCF.space.
Okay. Let's see if this goes through. Hopefully, you get it.
Okay. Well,
but if you can't, you can't. All right. Anything else that we should talk about?
I think just
that
is keep your eye in the sky, never give up, and never surrender.
Absolutely, Tom. As always, thank you. When I get us archived, I will send you the information, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Okay.
And staying in touch. Thanks a lot.
Always
and
a pleasure.
Listeners, that's it. Remember, we have our Friday morning show tomorrow, so stay tuned for that one. And, Tom, I may not get this archived before the Friday morning show, but I'll try to. But
okay.
I'll get you the information as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And all of you, thank you. And let us know your thoughts on the lightning round show idea with Tom. And everybody have a great night. Keep looking up. Goodbye from Tom, myself, and the Space Show.